Happy Monday morning. The passion flowing through our veins this morning on the Fan Morning Show. Justin and Ailish. What a weekend, buddy.
Can we not have weekend Leaf playoff games?
Like, I wanted to jump on the radio on Sunday morning.
Exactly. But there are pros and cons because, you know, you're not like rushing to bed after. You can actually enjoy and savor the moment. Mm. Scroll Twitter endlessly. It was worth scrolling Twitter for Saturday night.
Oh, my God. Were we ever. What a weekend. What a game from your Maple Leafs. Nick Nurse was fired. Blue Jays go down to Yankee Stadium and show up. But the Leafs, your Maple Leafs.
It is all about the Leafs, ain't it?
Oh, baby. The passion is flowing. You saw it. Kyle Dubas in the press box beside Jason Spezza, fist pumping. Like, there's no stoic Kyle Dubas anymore. He's jumping into fans' faces. It's just a lot of passion.
Man, Spezza must have had like a good rookie season as a an executive. Right beside the big guy on the road.
That's a hot spot.
Look at Spez.
Like, you don't get that. It's not like take your kid to work day. You've earned that spot.
Yeah, you earned that seat next to Kyle.
Man, I
got to be a bodyguard up there too, I guess.
The split screens that Sportsnet did where it's OT winner, Spezza and Dubas and Maple Leaf Square in one video will hopefully age wonderfully and live in infamy, that video. But it was Electric City.
I want to ask you right off the top here, and we're taking calls at 7:30. Of course. So maybe you can answer this question for me. Because, yeah, it was a big night. Big win. 2-1. Maple Leafs lead the series after falling behind 1-0. But are you more or less confident with the Maple Leafs now? I don't even know how to answer that question personally.
You
asked me thinking
that
about it myself, and I just don't know. Where do you land on that?
Okay, logical side of the brain. How about this? Because don't you have left side, right side? Whatever.
You do have two sides. I don't know which one's in charge of logic.
We're going to make two different sides. Logical side and Leafs fan side. Because I think those
logical
can be different.
Yeah.
Logical side is like they played like crap for that second period. They did not deserve to win the game. They found a way. Samsonov stole a game. What did we talk about? Keys to the series. Samsonov needs to be able to steal one game. He did
that.
That
to happen. Okay, check mark. Now where do we go next?
Logical side says the Maple Leafs did something that they notoriously would not have done. So that is a good point. Leafs fan side says, let's go, plan the parade. Hell yeah. That's the defining point of the series. It's all up from here. You win a game that Tampa gave their biggest, biggest punch. Like, can Tampa play better than that? You find a way to win a game, I'm all in. I'm face painted in blue and white. Logical side says that was a bad performance. I don't know how much more confidence I have in this team. But it's all, that's a quiet part of the brain this morning, is what I'm saying.
I'm conflicted because I always expected like it to be difficult.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess that's not completely true. I mean, I guess I did take the Leafs to win in six or whatever, and I thought they were going to have their moments. And I guess I thought that way because I wasn't sure we were going to see that version of the Lightning, right? Like, I didn't know if Lightning...
Well, they were
didn't know if the Lightning still had that performance in them. And that looked like a Stanley Cup contender. That looked like a team that, oh, they're still very much the Tampa Bay Lightning. And fatigue, whatever, I know, third gear all season long. Like, forget all that. It doesn't matter because they are still the Tampa Bay Lightning. They are still here. They're still capable of dominant postseason performances. Mm-hmm. I was not convinced we were ever going to see that. But once we've kind of like, you know, got some groundwork here, the Leafs kind of throwing away game one, Tampa obviously did not respond in game two. But seeing that, it's like, oh, this is not pushover. This is going the distance either way. And I guess if it goes the distance, the Leafs did get what they haven't got before, which was winning a game where they frankly did not deserve to win it.
100%.
And this is the thing that's eluded them. They haven't been able to, they've been able to go 50-50. But when it comes down to that last game, that 50-50 game, they cannot give you a great performance. They can't steal a game. They get games stolen away from them. This is a complete role reversal, honestly.
Maybe that's why we don't know how to feel. Because this is something are uncharacteristic to having to talk about. And Sheldon Keefe said this post-game as well. That's a game in the past we wouldn't have won. Yeah, 100%. That's why you haven't won any series. And that's why we're all like, what the hell do we feel, right? They won a game that they shouldn't have won.
And Tampa wins those games all the time, mm-hmm. right? They always have one of those games that helps them get through series. So are we taking that away from Tampa in previous years? No.
No.
They hang on in certain situations, and then they have their great performances in other games, and they take it from there. So the Leafs have that now. They have, well, game one, they were awful. Game two,
I think you can erase game one and two from the script, and this is now the series. Like,
I still don't know, because game one, just for a second, game one, awful. Game two, outstanding. Yeah, you can wipe the slate clean. Then game three, really, really lucky. So where does that leave you next? Are they going to be outstanding again?
You know what I think
it leaves
you? Is
it just going to go back and forth?
The Maple Leafs have the momentum, duh, of course, but they have this moment to look back on and say, hey, we're down 2-3-1 in a game. We've done it before. We have the key playoff performers that we didn't have previously, and we'll get into that. Ryan O'Reilly looks like the best acquisition ever in Leafs history. Like, this guy has come in and done exactly why you get a Conn Smythe winner championship guy. Even Luke Shen looks like he's added a level of adulthood to that team and poise. You have guys like Morgan Riley, the other Riley, who has erased his lower than expected regular season, has now been a playoff performer that you've never even dreamed of. You got Ilya Samsonov, who found a way in the second period to get over the mental hurdle of a terrible first and find some fortitude and steal you a game. So let's say it's, you know, tonight they play again. Let's say Tampa gets on the board early. You're in their barn. First of all, the crowd's kind of compared to,
well, you get a little tired of winning, I guess.
Yeah, that's right. Tough bounce. So you get in, let's say tonight they go down one or two. They've found a way to win bad games now. So I think that they've got this little bit of upper edge.
This is now a permanent thing.
Well, I think that they just did it. I think, hey, you want to have short-term memory when you lose a game, but you want to have long time remembering that game on Saturday night when you're down in the series. So I think that's why I think it's a factor that we're going to look forward to, hopefully, in this series as a defining moment of this team being united. Like, they celebrated, they felt what it's like to win a game that they had no business winning.
The Leafs have always had three really good efforts in them, right? Always. Hmm. They always get to game seven. You only need three again. Mm-hmm. You only need three because you stole one for the first time. And you said, yeah, this is a game they never win. Of course. This is the thing that's killed them over and over and over again, is that other teams get this. They don't get this. They have those games stolen from them. They can't steal them from other teams. And maybe they are different now, because as much as you don't win that game normally, do you win that game this year if you don't have Ryan O'Reilly or Luke Shen?
It doesn't seem like you would have.
I guess, or Ilya Samsonov. Like, I don't know how to quite categorize Ilya Samsonov, but Shen and O'Reilly have their fingerprints all over that victory. All over it.
That's,
I mean,
why Dubas
O'Reilly
celebrated.
Clearly.
That's why Dubas was celebrating so much, I think. I think there's a 25% chance or factor that he was watching that being like, I added those two guys and they look damn good.
Well,
in
massive,
this big moment.
Massive, massive validation.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, you know, what we saw from Dubas was, I mean, I look at Dubas and Keefe and the pressure is just like, it's written all over their faces, all over. Like, this is it. They know this is the time. And Keefe's wearing it. Dubas screaming at fans like, I've never seen anything like that before.
So I need to know what was going on up in that press. If you haven't seen the video, it's all over Twitter. So just log in and type in Dubas. He's beaking at some Tampa Bay fans. And you, who's that? John Boy's lip reader? We need the people that can read lips. Because there's no glass, first of all. It's like full-on box.
And he's basically in the crowd.
He's right behind the top row of the Tampa Bay fans. And of course, there was obviously something going on during that game, whether it's Tampa Bay fans chirping Dubas or saying, like, your job's done, your team sucks, whatever was said. He was certainly ready to prove whatever his point was when the OT winner was scored. He's going back and forth with fans. The passion. Everyone's quote tweeting it on Maple Leaf side, being like, that's my GM. That's my GM. And all the Tampa fans are so disrespectful. It's so unprofessional of your GM. It's like, yeah, shut up.
There's nothing better than playoff hockey. There's nothing worse than playoff hockey Twitter. Like, it's just like either side, you just all these extreme takes. Yeah. I will say on Dubas, though, it feels like one of the few real moments. Like, what kind of guy is Kyle Dubas, actually?
That guy, I think.
I fear that we're going to figure out what kind of guy he is if he goes on to a different
market. All right, don't start that.
I'm just saying, like, I think that's more Dubas than corporate Kyle, right? I think that's
that
I think
was
that's
a Dubas
him.
With relief, excitement, pride. Like, he was energized
and also immense
in that
pressure.
Moment.
You're feeling immense pressure. Your team is failing in front of you, like, actively playing bad. You're getting chirped all night for it, and then you have your moment to fire back.
Yeah.
And he fired back, and I was just like, oh, God, he's going to have to apologize for this tomorrow. It's going to be so embarrassing.
I love that he didn't.
And I haven't seen anything yet. If we see something today, I'm going to be, like, my head might explode. But so far, no one's like, hey,
good
Kyle.
For him.
Kyle, little PR.
Do you think they'll put him there in the same spot tonight? Maybe there's a different spot to put the GMs.
It might be a different spot tonight for Kyle.
Nonetheless, it was good to see some energy, some passion, and... That game, as we mentioned, was one that the Maple Leafs probably shouldn't win. They had, what, the 25% deservometer?
Yeah, the deservometer was as unkind as it's ever been, I think, to the Maple Leafs, at least this season.
So you asked the question, are you more or less confident after the game? I think it's a great one. 590, 590. We'll take your calls at 7:30 as well. We're going to be doing this all series long and hopefully for many series to come. We'll give you those numbers, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, or *590 on your Rogers cell phone, 7:30. We'll take your calls. Are you more or less confident? Did you love the fight from Austin Matthews? How about
there?
Ryan O'Reilly? I feel like there's so much to unpack.
Let's start with Keith and Cooper and the Matthews.
Yes, because this is certainly a big... We've had a whole day to decipher
and
to
and for
uncover.
That reason, I don't think we have to do a recap. Like, I think everyone listening to the show probably saw it, knows kind of what we're talking about. But I guess maybe haven't heard the comments from Keefe and Cooper. So I just to lay quick groundwork, we have the Morgan Riley Braden Point collision. Braden Point goes in the boards, honestly looks like he breaks his neck in the moment.
It
like
was
that was
scary.
That was as like, oh my God, a moment I've experienced in a while. Like I thought seriously hurt. And it causes a melee. And Stamkos basically imposes a fight on Austin Matthews. There's a fight between Ryan O'Reilly and Nikita Kucherov. Darren Radish gets a penalty somehow. A lot of chaos, all these things going on. And ultimately, the Leafs get a power play out of it because the five-minute major originally given to Morgan Riley was taken completely off the board, not even dropped down to a two-minute minor, no downgrade, completely off the board. And I will say, the officials in that moment, and they're criticized here, and did they get it all right? Whatever. How they handled the Riley Point collision is exactly how it should be done. That was textbook.
Yes, but at the moment, I'll say everybody freaked out, deservingly so, because he was getting a five-minute major. But
well, when I saw it, it was like, Morgan Riley's not playing again this year.
Right. Great insight to do that, to be able to review the call. I'll just say that.
And that's really, really important because these things happen so quickly. And I guess my one thing I'd quibble with for the NHL perspective would be like, okay, you called a major, you took it off the board. Why can't we review the entire melee, like, quickly? Because it was kind of nonsense.
They needed to have a couple different camera angles to see what was going on.
Exactly.
But it was just chaos.
I just don't know how the referees are supposed to, like, accurately call that situation when 10 guys are fighting around them. Anyway, the Leafs managed to have it not crush them. Because the five-minute major, if it stood, game over, right? I mean, done. But anyway, they still had more Austin Matthews out of the game for 5 minutes. Oh, Ryan O'Reilly out of the game for 5 minutes. Not a great scenario for the Maple Leafs, even though they got a power play out of it.
Ended up being 8 minutes because there was no whistle blown.
Ended up being 8 minutes. So Austin Matthews off the ice for 8 minutes. Anyway, we all know Leafs won. They survived that situation. Sheldon Keefe comes on post-game, and we'll throw to that clip now. He basically lays out what a lot of people have been able to think and maybe not articulate the best for a long time, is that Tampa is so understanding and able to capitalize on the muck. We've talked about the muck since this series started. How do you perform inside the muck? I don't know if the Leafs have acquitted themselves all that well, but at least someone is drawing attention to what the Tampa Bay Lightning seemingly do and capitalize on when the game devolves from something other than an actual hockey game. Let's go to that now.
I look at that whole sequence. First of all, I love how he stood up for himself. Again, just another example of our guys standing in there. But the fight itself, I mean, it's a classic example of a veteran championship team like Tampa Bay manipulating the officials and taking advantage of a situation, right? I mean, they know we're basically already going on the power play because of the Kucherov situation. So it's a free-for-all. They can do whatever they want, and they just know the way the games get called, they're not going to get another penalty. I mean, you watch that sequence back. I mean, to say that we shouldn't be on a 5-on-3 is, I mean, the official is literally holding Steven Stamkos with one arm and his other hand with no glove on is punching Austin Matthews. Not the red linesman, the referee who calls the penalties was holding Stamkos while this was happening, and it's 5-on-5 instead of us getting another penalty there. So credit to Tampa for recognizing that situation. It's a free pass to do what you want, and not only do they get out of it unscathed, but they take Matthews and O'Reilly with them to the box. Brilliant play by the Lightning there in manipulating that situation.
I'm surprised, there's two things on this. He hasn't gotten fined for saying that, because you're saying you're manipulating the refs, boom, instant fine from the player safety or whatever the department is that does that. But let's move off from that. Yeah. I think still. It's so true that Austin Matthews had no intent of fighting. If you watch the video, he truly has three hockey sticks in his hands. He's cleaning up play.
He's cleaning the
ice.
He
is picking up other players' sticks, and he's standing there. And Steven Stamkos grabs him, as Keith says, and has talking to the ref and is punching Austin Matthews in the face. Mm-hmm. So Austin Matthews has to fight at this point. He's getting two or three punches to the face. He had no interest in fighting for a clear reason. He's not a big fighter, as we can tell.
That wasn't his finest moment.
Poor performance. Hey, maybe we'll give him another chance where he wants to fight. But Steven Stamkos, grabbed him and said, I'm going to put this guy in the box. We're going to fight. So clearly there was an alternative motive to why Steven Stamkos wanted to fight. Also, Matthews had no interest in fighting.
Mm-hmm. I think Sheldon Keefe makes an impeccable point, because I do agree 100% that when, okay, the lines suddenly get blurred, Tampa just is so much more comfortable, but also understanding it can capitalize on this moment. However, he did say, yeah, they knew that they were going to be killing a penalty,
well,
and that they weren't going to get another
nobody
one.
Nobody knew what was going on.
Yeah, that's the one thing that didn't make any sense to me, because there was a 5-minute major pending.
But
now they didn't call that yet.
Yeah.
But like to suggest that, oh, they're definitely going to be down a man in that scenario. I don't think Steven Stamkos is like, oh yeah, we're definitely like, it's okay if we don't get this power
play. But I think he saw, hey, Austin Matthews is on the ice. Why don't we take their top power play guy off the ice?
I also don't think that, because why would he assume? I think if there was a target, it should have been Mitch Marner, because Mitch Marner is the penalty killer.
I think if Steven Stamkos went over to fight Mitch Marner,
what's the difference?
I think you would pick Austin Matthews to fight over Mitch Marner.
The only thing I'm
he's
quibbling.
So little.
Yeah, and he would do, well, it would be the same result probably. The only thing I quibble with is that, like, it wasn't to me to take Austin Matthews off so that he couldn't be a part of a power play. It was, I have an opportunity here to punch Austin Matthews in the face and to throw him off, to whatever, to send a message. They are so good at understanding when, okay, this there's a moment of chaos. Can I do something and be productive in this moment? And this is something that the Leafs have been kind of uncomfortable with forever, right? When the game devolves from something else, when it's like a who's tougher competition, the Leafs always lose. And that doesn't mean that they're going to lose the game or whatever, but they're just not comfortable in those moments. And Tampa realizes that every second spent on the ice in the postseason is a moment worth capitalizing on. So whatever happened in that moment in terms of like, okay,
why the decision was made doesn't really matter.
Why Matthews, whatever. And John Cooper was right to point this out. We'll go to him now. Cooper says, and the classic lawyer, John Cooper, like, lawyer, Sheldon Keefe's never going to win the war of words, because every time Cooper has a free moment to respond, he's going to go to his lawyer background and basically just knock it out of the park. Mm-hmm. And he understood that, yeah, how could it be that way when, you know, we were expecting to go on the power play ourselves after the Morgan Riley point incident. So let's go to Cooper's response to Keefe now.
Manipulated the referees. All right, I'm not sure what that means, but I would say this, when that hit happened, I think everybody watching at home and everybody in the building thought, including us, thought we were going on a power play. And so our two best power play players, I don't think they would ever sit there and take themselves off a power play unless they thought something unjust happened. So I'm not sure that us taking Austin Matthews doesn't kill penalties. So I don't know how that actually worked against us, to be honest. Now, we ended up being shorthanded after that, but I don't think anybody thought that was going to happen at the time. So I don't know. That one's a little different for me.
Nonetheless, Steven Stamkos sees Braden Point, one of their best players in the league, down with injury, which also was kind of scary when he got up and then he skated off and then he got fell down again. Anyway, he's back. He's good. 5 minutes later, he's on the ice. Anyway, he sees Austin Matthews, who is their best player, and says, well, one of ours is down. Let's grab one of ours. Whether he thought it was going to be a power play or not a power play, he made a conscious decision to grab the best player on the Maple Leafs and punch him in the face. That's...
Yeah, it's about retribution and sticking. And this is what they do so well. They don't... Like, if Braden Point goes down, you saw they were all seeing red. Everyone on the bench, on the ice, was furious. And they're throwing around, like, death threats from bench to bench. If you
so
hear Patrick
that
Maroon.
After that, too.
Like, a lot... Like, it's just chaos. And it's not about, like, hey... like this.
They said death threats?
I think Maroon said he was going to... You know, kill someone. Anyway.
Jesus.
It's not about like competitive advantage, maybe, but it's just the lightning way. If someone goes down, it is a brawl and everyone's going to be pissed off and everyone's going to be going at it and you have to get roped into it because that's just what the Tampa Bay Lightning do. And the Leafs like surviving that, I wouldn't say that's like a big moment. I'm not sure they got through it. In fact, I thought their worst hockey in a game where there was a lot of bad hockey was right after that because they looked tentative and the Lightning looked like they wanted to kill people. Like they
sure
were
did.
All over it. So it does kind of like the action transfers to the bench and Luke Shen is front and center. And I think it's the best. We should talk about that.
Well, let's play off hockey. One last thing. First time 260 goal scorers have ever fought each other. It's probably for the best.
Steven Stamkos is completely fine, comfortable himself. It was one part of the equation.
The Leafs lost that one.
It was one part of the equation that didn't look right.
Anyway, but this is the type of playoff hockey that you need to either be ready to rise to the occasion and be gritty and be tough to play against, like this entire Boston Bruins Florida Panthers series. Where did you see Ullmark trying to fight Tkachuk yesterday? It is unhinged in that series. The Maple Leafs need to feel comfortable in that, and they do look way different in this time around than they have previously. There's the bench discussion that we're going to talk about now, where you've got three of the scariest Tampa Bay Lightnings right up against like the barrier between the two benches.
Tanner Jeannot, legit terrifying.
He is a scary man.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I know they spent a lot of money on that guy. He looked better in that game, but... Like, I don't know, like, how many draft picks are equal to the fear that I feel when I look into that man's eyes. But he is
good purchase.
Freaky man.
Yeah.
So they've got three of the Tampa Bay Lightning, like, horror film characters staring into poor little Matthew Nyes' eyes, who's like, I just arrived to this league. I played college hockey where you weren't even allowed to, like, touch each other. And these men are threatening my life.
Mm-hmm.
But you've got steady... presence of Luke Shen right there being the nice police officer between the two benches
and taking shrapnel,
made a big difference.
Right? Like, Brandon Hagel's basically telling him he's the worst player in the series. And I'm thinking, Brandon Hagel, like, how many Stanley Cup rings do you have? Luke Shen has two. Mm. So, like, easy there. I mean, Brandon Hagel's the classic example of the guy who's real tough when all of his big 6'5" buddies are behind him. Yeah, it was like, okay, you can, like we say, terrifying. You can move aside Brandon Hagel, Jeannot, Maroon, Perry. Those are the guys that we're worried about.
But yes, the addition of Luke Shen in that moment, the addition of Luke Shen in that game, I know that's a small moment to pinpoint, just him being in the middle there, taking, like, just he, and he moved himself there on purpose. Like, he saw this shenanigans and went, sat, and stood right there to be a good veteran presence. But the main story of the game for me, besides Ilya Samsonov having a great... resilient comeback from the way he started the game to the way he helped the Maple Leafs win it without him, bye-bye, game's over, was the addition of veteran presence in that locker room, on that bench, and on that ice. Luke Shen being one of them, Ryan O'Reilly being the big one. Of course, he factored in the factor on all of the Maple Leafs' opportunities to go ahead. He is a steady, steady guy. He's played with Matthew Nyes. He's just been, I have such a level of confidence when he's out there on the ice. And having him and having Luke Shen be people that are like, let's dial it back here. Let's regroup. Like, we can do this. We can win this game. It has been the biggest determining factor of why the Maple Leafs have been able to come back and lead in this series for me.
Yeah, you hear all these amazing things about Luke Shen, like the greatest teammate ever. Vancouver didn't want to trade him despite, like, getting a third-round pick for a guy who's not going to change the fortunes of your franchise. And we're starting to see the reasons why. Like, him just stepping in there, taking bullets, being like, yeah, if like one of you wants to fight, sure, we can do it again, Tanner. Like, if it's that big of a deal, and just being completely okay with being the guy who's just going to act as a safety blanket.
But he's playing well too.
But that's where I'm getting at. And that was the second most important thing that we saw from Luke Shen, because Everybody on the Leafs side, I thought, was, as I mentioned before, completely scrambly. Like Tampa running around, seeing red. They looked like they were about to dominate.
It was probably their worst period of the year, almost, that second period.
Well, the third period is when it got, the second period was awful. Mm-hmm. Third period, I'm like, oh, they're going to be non-competitive now because they're going to shy away from the situation. Mm-hmm. And frankly, I thought a lot of guys did shy away from the situation. And the, that defense corps for the Maple Leafs, I kind of think was in ruin a little bit. Like, to a man, they're not playing well. Jake McCabe, I don't think that's a good series. Mm-hmm. TJ Brody's had two uncharacteristically bad games. Justin Hall, Mark Giordano, we understand that they're having some issues. Morgan Riley's had some great moments. But Luke Shen is growing in this series unlike anyone else. Mm-hmm. And when they were the most under fire, he was at his best. And it wasn't off the glass. He was making plays in the defensive zone to get out of the defensive zone cleanly. He stepped up in a major way. And when it seemed like everyone else was reacting or being affected by the situation, which was this highly energized, suddenly dangerous sort of game that broke mm-hmm. out, Luke Shen was just calm, cool, and collected and literally led them through the fire. I thought he was as important as anyone else in that game in those most tenuous moments. And honestly, he's exceeding my expectation at this point.
And it's, I think, because a lot of the attention goes to the guy that joined the team who has been bleeding blue and white since he was a kid, Clinton, Ontario. He's the Ryan O'Reilly, the factor, the Conn Smythe winner. And we've glamorized this a lot, myself included, about how important it is to add a veteran.
Well, we can glamorize because we get him to him next year.
Yeah, and that's why maybe Luke Shen got a little bit less shine, because Ryan O'Reilly, he is the factor on all of the goals. And not just like, oh, I passed the puck in a great sense, or I scored the goal with, what, less than a minute left in the game. Mm-hmm. But he is just like consistent, steady, stoic leader by example. I'm sure he's leading, like sheltering Matthew Knies, who's looked great in this series. Like, maybe he's allowing him to flourish without being like, oh my God, I don't know what I'm doing on this fourth line. Like, he's certainly been a great pair to him. I'm sure in the dressing room, there's no doubt about it that you look around, you see that guy, what he brings as a presence has been electrifying for this team. But yeah, he's a part of every single one of those goals in the Maple Leafs win. And that's just like a small way to categorize how great he's been to this team. So yes, Ryan O'Reilly has, we've teased, oh yeah, you got the Conn Smythe winner. There's just no doubt that he's been the biggest presence on this team.
So the Leafs have tried forever to like insulate their young guys, leaders mm-hmm. coming in, good personalities, Patrick Marleau, Joe Thornton, go down the list, right? They've tried to do it and it's like succeeded and failed. Like Jason Spezza was great for this team, mm-hmm. but could he help lead you over the, get you over the hump? Probably not. Mark Giordano, like we think this is such a great slam dunk, but it's kind of dicey right now.
It's because we've done this story so many times, right?
And they've tried, and I do believe in its importance. I think the Patrick Marleau thing was just way overstated and that hurt them more than anything else, but we don't have to relitigate that. But the difference between Ryan O'Reilly and all those other guys is that Ryan O'Reilly can still play at an elite level. Ryan O'Reilly is still, probably your best player in the series.
Yeah.
He's been unbelievable. Every shift is productive with him, at least it seems. So it's not just, hey, a little leadership to help guide the people who are ultimately going to take us on our way. Well, no, everyone's getting behind Ryan O'Reilly, mm-hmm. and that's the way we're going to get to the destination that we want to go to. Like, I'm watching that game, and I'm like, does John Tavares need Ryan O'Reilly again? Like, forget Matthew Knies, mm-hmm. because he's the fixer. He's the new fixer, where you can just throw him at a problem area and he's going to give you a good shift. It's just the most repeatable, predictable stuff for Ryan O'Reilly over and over and over again. And all these big moments, scoring with the 6-on-5, he wins the draw to get Morgan Riley the overtime winner.
Yep.
He's blocking shots at the end of regulation. All the stuff the Leafs have been without, Ryan O'Reilly is providing. And it's going to take everybody else to get on board and do it with him in order to get there. But this is leadership. Leadership, the strongest leaders are the ones who can actually hold their own still. And that's the problem with the Jason Spezza. That was the problem with the Joe Thornton. That was the problem with the Patrick Marleau. Mm-hmm. They are only as good as they are as players, ultimately, as leaders, because eventually it just falls short if you can't do it both ways. And Ryan O'Reilly has that pedigree. And there was concern, does he still have it? And now I'm thinking, like, this guy is so important to this team in every way, and losing him at the end of the season would be heartbreaking.
Oh God, don't get there yet.
We don't have to get there yet because he is the reason why they're up 2-1 yep. in this series. And Ryan O'Reilly has been everything that they could have asked for, and probably the biggest addition Kyle Dubas has ever made to this team.
Oh, hands down. Ryan O'Reilly, Morgan Riley as well, has been a major, clearly, reason why they're up 2-1 in the series. He's got that OT winner. He had the 4-assist night when the Maple Leafs won game 2. He is a different guy in the playoffs, thank God, because he was not a good guy for the Maple Leafs in terms of his on-ice performance in the regular season. He's clearly one of the leaders on this team. You saw that photo. It's like he's skating off the ice, blood on his face, blood on his jersey, and like that's a guy you want to rally behind. And the Maple Leafs have certainly done that. He's really loved in that dressing room. He can be, some people think, the captain of this team. Mm-hmm. And hell yeah, he showed that. That OT winner was obviously clutch, huge performance in that moment. But he is just a different guy in the postseason. Thank goodness.
And that's what they needed, because unfortunately the rest of the defensemen have been different guys as well.
So you've got him leading the back end. You have Ryan O'Reilly and just a steady presence up front. That's where I'm in the more confident feeling this morning. Maple Leafs are back tonight, of course, game 4 in Tampa Bay. We'll take your calls at 7:30. We want to hear how you're feeling, if you're feeling more confident, what you gleaned from that win that they shouldn't have won, simply stated.
Can we do 2 things before we get to Nurse?
Yes.
Quickly on Samsonov, Civ to Savior. He was absolutely brutal in that first period. I don't know what happened between the first and second period, but he was awful. Mm-hmm. And then he was downright brilliant. And I still, like, this just makes me more confused because I don't know exactly what we're going to get from him. I don't think the Leafs know what we're getting from him.
36 saves.
But I thought, honestly, after the first period, we might have to see Joe Woll tonight. Like, next one goes in and it's Joe Woll until Joe Woll gives it up. Because it seemed, again, untenable. It, like, if you can't get decent performances from him, they, no matter what they do, are pooched. And it was awful. Awful, awful, awful for 20 minutes. And then he was the star of the game. And do you have something on Samsonov?
No, I was just going to say, like, huge credit to him. Someone that we've often talked about, and he's talked about in the media about being nervous. He's used that word.
He looked nervous.
He's used the word of, like, I was overwhelmed. I've been nervous in those big moments. And whatever he did between first and second period, he came out like a new guy, and he was the reason the Maple Leafs held it together and were able to win in the end. And that is a huge sign of confidence because they, as you said, could have been Joseph Woll in there sometime in that game. And for him to dial it back in and find a way to stay steady and confident, he made massive saves in the second period and in overtime.
Yeah.
So you got to feel good about Samsonov. And you know he's going to feel good. You know he's going to feel good going into tonight because he ended that game off that trajectory of all of a sudden being, what'd you say, Civ to Savior?
Mm-hmm.
Trademark that. He's coming in tonight feeling like he's riding a little momentum.
You'd hope so. But like surviving really bad situations, both the Leafs did that and their own goaltender did that. And where does that leave you? I'm not really sure. Like, is it just automatic?
That's going to be the DNA of the team we're going to find tonight.
Hopefully. Like this, we'll preview it a little bit later, like what has to happen, because we got a lot to get to. We got to get to Nick Nurse. But like, this is the opportunity once again. Like, I thought they were going to be chasing the series the whole way through, but now they lead it. And can you put your foot on the throat? That's something we've been talking about forever, and they have that opportunity now. They are super conscious of the Ilya Samsonov, like, narrative, because they're not even letting him speak. There was a little controversy there.
Now, you want to play that clip quickly? We have...
Yeah, let's throw that quickly.
Keith was asked post-game about, like, why is Samsonov not talking to the media?
Have you been talking to Vasilevsky at all through the series?
No. Well, we never talked to the other goalie anyway, so...
Yeah. Well, let's let him just play goal.
Like... I heard some rumblings about this when I was at game 2, that there was a little frustration there. Not just like, you know, not being...
the reporters want to ask
not being
Samsonov
a hermit
questions.
Yeah, they've been looking for him for a while, and it's not happening. And I, like, if it's going to affect his performance, if, like, he says too much, if there's the narrative growing, like, we understand that he's very candid. He might be saying too much. He might be letting you in a little bit too much if he keeps saying, yeah, I was nervous. It was like, I was nervous in the first period. Like, when are you going to not be nervous? And then they'll have all these stories being written about where his head's
mindset
is.
That is a good question. Is Vasilevsky going in front of the Tampa Bay media? I have no idea.
Well, I mean, if you requested, maybe he would. But again, the reporter who says we don't talk to him.
They don't have to put anyone in front of the media.
Exactly. And I'm completely fine if it's going to help Ilya Samsonov play better to avoid that, whatever. But I know that there was some frustration about Samsonov's availability.
Well... as Tom Keith said, just let him play.
Talk to him in round 2.
Yes. Okay. So tonight, looking to take a 3-1 lead over the Bolts, 7:30 p.m. Sportsnet, CBC, and Sportsnet Now. All right, when we got off the air, we'll talk more Leafs, of course. We'll take your calls at 7:30. We got lots to go through today. We got lots of guests, but we need to talk about the Toronto Raptors because if we got off the air Friday and we talked about Masai Ujiri having a press conference at 11 a.m., we said we need XYZ from Masai Ujiri. We need some sort of direction. We need some sort of movement. And he did just that. Nick Nurse and the Toronto Raptors are no longer a pair. That he was relieved of his duties, which means he was fired. Not a mutual agreement, because that would have been specified that they mutually agreed to part ways. It's just an interesting tidbit. Masai Ujiri did speak with the media for about an hour and was quite candid, I would say. Maybe,
was he?
I think he was. I would say this is a press conference I would have liked at the trade deadline. Like the way that he spoke with some answers. Well, obviously he made a move. Like he fired Nick Nurse, but he said a lot about this team's culture, identity, spirit, and that is something we all questioned all season long, and he addressed it and was very open about how, like, I'm going to play some clips. I think he was extremely candid. It was a big thing for your leader to say the things he said about this team. Let's play the first clip when he says he didn't enjoy watching this team play basketball.
To watch us play this year was not us. I did not enjoy watching this team play. And I think that spoke loud and clear to everything that I think went on this year. And it bothered all of us. It bothered coach too, you know. But sometimes we have to make change and we have to move forward. We're about winning here, and I think we've not only said it, we've at least tried to do it, and that's where we're going to continue to go.
So there's a lot. We'll play a couple more maybe if we have some time. Not enjoying watching this team play. There's other clips, other quotes where he said that they had lost their spirit. And that's an indicator of the players, the organization, and the coach. And he takes some credit for it. He says this is not all on Nick Nurse. Like somebody had to move, right? Like Nick Nurse, we talked about it, wasn't the right fit anymore. Whether he had lost the room, whether he had just run his course, or the team wasn't buying in, or the structure wasn't working, whatever the situation was, I was less than surprised to see Nick Nurse fired. Maybe, wow, they finally did it, right? But to say that the team wasn't clicking, there was complacency, there was selfishness, there was, you know, no spirit. Like, that's a lot to put on how the season went, and we all felt it, so it's validating, right?
Well, the most candid remark we just played, and it was the mic drop moment, I think, because Masai Ujiri said what we've all been thinking, right? Mm-hmm. I didn't enjoy watching them play either this year.
No.
And for Masai to say it, it did mean a lot, because you're saying exactly how we feel, or exactly how a lot of the fan base feels, and I think that means something. However, like, I think the context of Nick Nurse winning a championship kind of clouded everything that was said, because it was a lot of, like, preserving the legacy of Nick, or at least we will never know how much or to the extent that it was about preserving the legacy of Nick, because he did win his championship. He's done something that you've never seen, you've seen once in your lifetime, and Nick Nurse was responsible for it, which is a Toronto team, the Big Four, winning a championship.
Correct.
And for that reason, he will always, you know, be held in a high regard. Mm-hmm. And forever, you'll be trying to protect what he did have here. And, you know, you don't want it to sour to the extent that it clearly did. And I think we don't know, like, he was pressed then about, like, okay, why did it get rotten here? And he's not going to say anything negative about Nick. And that's why I think there was still, like, you know, he was kind of like, a lot of these responses were veiled, and he's trying to deflect from a specific thing, which was, Nick Nurse at the end, I don't think was doing a good job. I think Nick Nurse is a large part of why this got rotten, but Masai Ujiri did not want to admit that. So I can only, like, put my own feelings on it. However, he said things about, you know, why the culture shifted this year, and he did put on the players. You mentioned selfishness, and I think that's, like, one of the big things. But, like, we don't know why it got selfish. Why was it to the extent that it did? Why did everyone start playing for one another rather than each other? And I don't know how you could separate the coach from that. And for that reason, I think there's always going to be questions because of the legacy piece with Nurse. Like, he's always, always, always going to be protected.
And Masai did say,
and deservedly so. But I think for that reason, we still are with major, major questions about this group. Because if they were just selfish on their own accord, why are any of them coming back, right? Like, why are these players allowed a free pass when Nick Nurse wasn't? I'm going to hope that Nick Nurse was a major part of the issue and maybe the exclusive issue. Because if not, if it really was about the selfishness of players, why would anything change with a new coach?
And I think that he left the door wide open for more changes to be made. He did say changes will be made. There's different players fits. There's different systems, roles, orientation. We're going to look at everything. This isn't just it. And it isn't enough. If
but
you just fire
that's
Nick Nurse.
Also lip service too, right? Like, oh yeah, we got to make changes. Are you going to actually make changes though? Because it seems
like... Well,
they
did make a major change already.
Yeah,
so I don't
coach.
Think there's any
but
like
in terms of personnel
hesitation.
With this team. I think you don't think there's hesitation. He didn't train anyone at the deadline.
Yeah, because he said all these moves can be made in the postseason.
And it's all about winning. He keeps saying, "I want to win." It's about winning here. We got to validate validate championships. What does that mean? We got to win here. How about you just step back? Because clearly there was something wrong with this team. Mm-hmm. And if you're saying it's all Nurse, which he's not saying, then what are we doing with this roster again? Like I was kind of like, okay, Masai, are you running it back with this group? Really? We're going to run this back with a new coach? I think they are.
I don't think they are.
I don't think you think they're going to make material changes this offseason.
I think they will make material changes this offseason.
I'm skeptical.
I heard enough from Masai, and whether it's lip service or not, that he had mentioned that they will continue to make changes this offseason. He says it.
I think he
And he'll
thinks,
be held accountable for that. I hope.
Will he? He gets to you know, exist off that championship forever too.
I don't think so. There's a trust in Masai that's going to end at some point.
I think
he made the big move to fire Nurse. This is before the NBA season has even ended. Now you have an off season with a new coach, and they want to have one in place by the draft. But he mentioned that they need to reset the culture to make major changes. So that's not enough just to fire Nick Nurse.
I agree, but I'm skeptical.
Okay,
I'm
the optimist.
I also think I also think he would have fired Nurse if Nurse didn't win a championship 5 months ago.
Right.
Because what does he point to something in like late November? Mm-hmm. Like he knew this team was flawed and
I think we can all agree it was
toxic.
It could have been done a long time ago.
Yeah, but and so what happened was Nick Nurse, because he'd won a championship, earned the benefit of the doubt or mm-hmm. earned at least, hey, let's waste a season to protect a guy's legacy. They did that. They 100% did that. It was untenable, and they knew it, and they did not act because of the championship or because he's owed $8 million, of course, of mm-hmm. 2 years. Like, they made business decisions, not basketball decisions, and now we see where they end up. Are they going to still make business decisions, or are they going to make basketball decisions? I don't know yet. Mm-hmm. I honestly don't know.
And you're justified to not know because this has been a stretch of no direction. It has been, what are the Raptors going to do? What is the Raptors' identity? What is their goal for each season? We have been very confused for a wide range of time after winning an NBA championship 4 years ago to then firing your head coach in a very short span. It has gone downhill quick. So maybe this is it. Like, this is the move that needed to be made. And whether it's late or not, I agree. It's late, but they did it. So if you just roll into the season, you still have major offseason decisions. Like, you can't just run it back. It's like all basically impossible. There's some sort of way that you can go into like, yeah, whatever. But
you can come back like slightly worse. Like that's kind of it, right? Like, I don't know if they can keep everyone. They have decisions to make too from the individual level.
Right.
I think I honestly came away from that thinking Nick Nurse is hoping Masai Ujiri is hoping and praying that Nick Nurse was the issue and that he can get more out of his team. And I frankly think that is majorly short-sighted.
Okay, well, I also think you need a little bit of patience.
Okay.
Which is hard to ask for Raptors fans right now, but I'm going to ask.
Let's quickly
talk
Nick Nurse legacy.
Hold on.
Quickly,
we're going to talk to Will Liu also at 8 o'clock, who's going to help us run through this. So this isn't just our only Nick Nurse discussion. We are up against the clock. The Nick Nurse legacy for me is he brought this city a championship. And we're always going to be forever grateful for that. I do believe that he lost some of the team at the end. I don't think that the way that this season ended is really jading my fact on, like, he did something that no Toronto team has been able to do in a long time. We're always going to be grateful for him. There's a banner hanging in Scotiabank mm-hmm. Arena that's in this century, this decade. Like, it is important for this franchise.
The ideal coach for the most ideal time in the history of the Toronto Raptors. And he capitalized on it, mm-hmm. and things don't last forever.
That's right.
It's really that simple. And he'll always have that. He'll always be the guy who did it. He was around at the perfect time, and he was the perfect coach for that perfect moment.
And he's going to go, and he'll be scooped up if he wants to coach somewhere else this this offseason, no doubt about it. Maybe he needs just a different change of scenery, and so do the Raptors. All right, we got to take a break. We've got a full day ahead. Frank Saravelli joins us every Monday at 7 a.m. We got lots to go through with him. Will Liu's going to join us at 8, and we'll have Stewie back in the fold at 8:30 to go through some more Maple Leafs vibes for this evening. We'll take your calls at 7:30, so get in the queue early, and we'll get through as much as we can. On the other side of the break, we got the A-List.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Now it's time for the A-List.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
What's up, baby?
All right, the new age of Twitter has begun, where all of us lost our blue check marks, and yet the world keeps spinning. The sun came up. We're just less important. And somebody that was very, very outspoken about Twitter Blue subscription, which you have to pay for, was LeBron James. Mm-hmm. So when he heard that Twitter Blue was going to require you to now pay, he tweeted on March 31st, "Welp, guess my blue will be gone soon, because if you know me, I ain't paying the five." However, when Twitter took away everyone's check marks, LeBron James remained. Now fans are speculating that LeBron was Le Cap, Le Liar.
Le Cap.
That's what people are calling him.
Le Cap.
And that he was lying and spending money on his blue check mark. But Elon Musk tweets out, "I'm paying for a few personally," and has now decided to pay for a few people's blue check marks. It is so stupid. And also, I've seen all these stats come out about how many people just like don't care and haven't paid for Twitter Blue. And it's going poorly for Elon Musk, clearly, because like nobody gives a crap.
Yeah.
But LeBron was like, "I would never pay for Twitter Blue." And Elon Musk came to the rescue.
I feel like that's kind of a violation. Like, if LeBron doesn't want it.
I'm sure LeBron's like, yes, it does, I want it.
You don't think you think he wants it?
I think he wants it.
Secretly?
Oh my God, of course he does.
I think it's an awful look.
That you have to pay for.
Especially if you said, "I'm not doing it," and then you have it. I mean, that's why Elon did it. He didn't just like, I mean, it's hard to not randomly pick LeBron James. Like, he's a massive, massive deal.
Well, he said
clearly.
A few people have. He's
but
paid
LeBron
for a few.
Made a stink about it. And he's like, "No, you're going to have the check mark."
Because the conversation keeps going. You know who has a check mark? Frank Saravelli.
I'll be honest. I think the real NHL insiders should have it.
So Elliot doesn't.
Otherwise,
and Jeff doesn't either.
Elliot doesn't have it.
Nope.
I thought for
Our
sure.
Sports
Elliot
talent
would have
ain't
it.
Making daily face off money.
I think Elliot should have it. The impersonators on July 1st.
Oh,
like, it's
going to
be a complete nightmare.
I feel like Elliot didn't even realize this. Like, do you think Elliot knows about Twitter Blue? I feel like he just logs
100%.
On tweets and logs
100%. I mean, Elliot's Elliot because he's got a million gazillion Twitter
followers. But I feel like he doesn't even like he's not like waking up like, "Oh my God, my check mark's gone."
I don't think he cares, but I definitely think it's a major consideration for these
I feel
guys.
Like we should just like, as the social team at Sportsnet, should be like, yeah, we need to just pay for Jeff's and Elliot's.
Probably.
Like, does anybody have it?
But they probably don't want it because there's a negative kind of thing associated with having
should
it.
Should we ask Frank about it?
Yeah, I guess.
I mean, it makes sense that he has it.
He won't be offended.
No, it's a very honest man. He'll say, I'm paying $8. I don't care.
But if you're Frank, you don't want to be impersonated.
I agree. But LeBron James getting free Elon Musk Twitter Blue is so nice of Elon.
Or maybe Frank's on the Elon list.
He might be.
Okay. Frank and LeBron. Frank and LeCap.
LeCap.
No cap with Frank.
LeCap. All right. Just a reminder, we're going to take your calls at 7:30. We're going to chat Leafs game 3, now moving to Leafs game 4 tonight. Do you feel more confident after the Maple Leafs found a way to win a game that they had no business winning? We'll take your calls at 416. Where's the number? 870-0590. 1-888-666-0590 or *590 on your Rogers cell phone. That'll be at 7:30. We'll get you in the queue early. We'll chat through that. And also, one question we're going to ponder. We don't have to make the decision tonight, but when Michael Bunting is allowed to return to play, does Matthew Nyes come out? Does Bunting even come in? How do they make this work? You get to make the decision on our hotline at 7:30. That and more all to come on the Fan Morning Show.